Behavioral Health Integrations podcast strives to inspire the next generation of mental health and addiction specialists. Our aim is to continue to raise awareness and encourage collaboration in the mental health and addiction industry so that it will continue to thrive. There are numerous approaches to treating mental health and substance abuse issues. On this show, we take pleasure in showcasing the diversity of these approaches used to improve the lives of others. So without further ado, your host, Jacob Minnig.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Behavioral Health Integration episode. Today, I have a very special guest, Sergey Vartanyan. Sergey is a psychedelic-assisted therapy advocate. Sergey has many years of experience working and learning about psychedelics and how they treat mental illness. Sergey will also explain the different types of intervention that he applies to individuals and the people that he works with. Sergey will also get into more discussions on his company right now and how they're involved in psychedelic-assisted therapy. So without further ado, let's get started. Well, Sergey, thank you so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for inviting.
So I'm just curious, where are you joining us from?
I'm joining from Yerevan, Armenia. It's 6 a.m. here.
Oh, wow. Okay. Right now, I'm in Minnesota, United States. So right now it's 9 p.m. So again, I'm very excited to have you on the show, man.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting. Appreciate it.
So I'm just curious, what got you interested in psychedelics in the first place?
Well, it's very personal. My wife was struggling from complex PTSD for many years. Okay. Her father was an abusive person, and because of the childhood trauma, she was struggling a lot. And unfortunately, we tried all kinds of traditional medicines. She was on SSRIs, SNRIs. She tried psychotropic medication, and we didn't see really a lot of relief. She also tried traditional therapy, you know, talk therapies and such. And those were not very helpful either. And then one day I read this article about the vets who were going to Mexico and doing a ayahuasca ceremonies and coming back with lots of relief. And I was intrigued because for me and for us, psychedelics were something, you know, to have fun and not, we weren't looking into it from a medical perspective, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
And we got intrigued, and I went into the rabbit hole, you know, started reading. If you look into my library, I have more than 100 books, all in the sphere of the psychedelic healing and all kinds of that type of knowledge. So we got intrigued, and because unfortunately those medicines are not legally available in United States, that's where we used to live. We used to live in Las Vegas. We just moved in a few months ago. We moved back to Armenia.
Okay.
And we started researching the topic, reading, and I went to the MDMA-assisted psychotherapy training with MAPS, Multidisciplinary Association of Psychedelic Studies. I did a training with the Polaris for the ketamine therapy. So essentially, I became a therapist for my wife, psychedelic-assisted therapist. And we saw a huge relief, like it's a day and night, how beautifully she was transformed from all her trauma. In 2020, the Turkey and Azerbaijan brutally attacked Armenia. Armenia is a small 3 million population country. Mm-hmm. And as a result of this war, we had more than 15,000 vets and their family members who are struggling from various mental health disorders. It's PTSD, depression, and other disorders. So seeing this relief, seeing this healing for my wife, I decided to do something for my people, because I was born and raised in Armenia. Mm-hmm. And And after the war, I created this mental health foundation, which is a nonprofit, Antea Bliss, which is focusing on bringing these healing modalities to Armenia. And that was the main reason why we moved back to Armenia to bring these healings to Armenia. In order to bring any medicine, making it legally available in the country, there are basically two pathways. One is if it's registered, say, in FDA registered or somewhere in Europe, you provide all the dossier, all the paperwork to the regulator, and then regulator, whether it approves it or denies it. But most of the cases, if it's FDA approved, they will approve it. And the other pathway are the clinical trials. And since MDMA is not legally available, I'm sure you know that it's in a stage three to B stage, which is essentially the final stage for becoming a legally available medicine. I was talking with Rick Doblin the other day, and he mentioned that they hope that it will be legally available, registered by 2024.
I would love to get that guy on my podcast one of these days. I really would.
Yeah, he's great. He's great. Yeah. And he's the chairman of the board of the Antea Bliss Foundation. Really great guy. So we decided to go, since it's not registered, we decided to go through the second way, which is conducting clinical trials. And we recruited an amazing team in Armenia. We have Professor Maruk Yerian, which is a famous psychiatrist in Armenia, who will be our principal investigator. And we have a great team here, people who are therapists who are in process of going through training with MAPS. Yep. And they are mostly trauma-informed. Someone is a holotropic breathwork practitioner, you know, people who know this kind of altered states of consciousness and have a trauma-informed training and such. So that's what I'm doing now. That's what I'm busy with now. And also I run this psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy group on Facebook. Which is about less than 5,000 people, a large group. It's a community where, you know, we share all the knowledge, we share the expertise, and those are the things I'm passionate about.
For my listeners, what is the group called? Just so I can write
down. Psychedelic Assisted Therapy.
Okay.
It's on Facebook. And we have another group on LinkedIn to psychedelic assisted therapy, a smaller one.
With your name, because there's actually a lot of groups. I know a couple of people who do groups who have the exact same title. Just so, and I'll make sure I put that link on my show notes so they know it's going to yours.
Yes, thank you.
And going back to your wife, so did she try MDMA? Was that the one that she did try?
Yeah, we tried a few medicines. We tried MDMA. Okay. We tried psilocybin. We tried LSD, but mainly MDMA was this catalyst of the healing, and then psilocybin and LSD kind of caught up on that healing journey.
Okay, not to get into too much detail about your wife, but would you mind telling us a little bit about maybe some of the symptoms she was struggling with, like sleeping or whatnot, and then what did it improve on? Or because you said it was like life changing for her, right?
Yes. Well, nightmares were part of her sickness. She also was struggling from constant anxieties. From early morning, she would wake up, you know, and the anxiety will kick in until the late night. So lots of anxiety, lots of rumination of the negative thought patterns. Lots of that kind of stuff mainly.
So then, over time, when she was trying MDMA therapy with you, or you were conducting therapy, did the nightmares less severe, or do they go away? Do they reduce in the amount of days she experiences them? What did that look like?
It's a great question. They reduced significantly. She still may get some troubling dreams, but those are not that severe and those are not that often.
And I just love the training you went through. Like, I'm very interested in doing it myself. I just can't afford it right now, but I really want to do it someday. So in the training they put you through, do they train you to, again, and obviously you can't get into full details, of course, but when you're going through the training and therapy, do they like teach you to do therapy while a person is like getting dosed, or do you wait till after they're done with their experience, then do the therapy?
So the training is about three parts, which is preparation, how to do a proper preparation, how to do the dosing, and how to do the integration. But also there is also, which I really love about MAPS, they also do a lot of self-work type of training, where you really dive deep into your psyche, because in order to be able a good mental health practitioner in the field of psychedelics, you need to have your own experiences, you need to have your own deep healing in order to be able to be a better healer for the person you are assisting. And those are the things that really stand out for me. Also, they give you a perspective of the, not obviously there is the historical content about psychedelics and all of that, but also they teach you about other modalities that work really well, you know, about somatic experiencing, like holotropic breath work.
That's so cool.
All those things that really work very sweet with psychedelics, assisted psychotherapy. And also a lot of focus on the integration. During the training, also we watch actual drug sessions, integration sessions, obviously with the permission of the patient, with the consent of the patient, but not live. Those are recorded sessions, but we watch them, and then with the therapists who conduct those sessions, then we do the back and forth Q&A sessions, lots of group discussions. It's really, I would very much recommend anyone who is looking into psychedelic psychotherapies to go through this training. And also they have, I believe, yes, there is a fee, but also they provide some grants, some scholarships.
Okay.
So if somebody is not able to afford, there are some scholarships they can apply to for good, but certainly it's an amazing training. I will most definitely recommend it. The Polaris training for the ketamine therapy also is great. I would, if somebody is looking into ketamine, which is a legally available psychedelic medicine in United States and in a lot of other countries, it's also a wonderful training that I will most certainly recommend.
So I have a question, right, regarding scope of practice, and I'm just curious if it's going to be different than the United States in Armenia, where you're from right now. Can you, what is your scope of practice? Let's say if you are, so it's a certification, right? It's not a license, it's a certification. So you can't, you don't really have the ability to actually give doses, right? But you just have the ability just to do basic therapy with people, or what can you actually do with your certifications?
Well, in Armenia, you can do just integration. You can't dose people because it's not legally available. But my focus, I'm not doing therapy with the people. I'm not working with the patients. What I'm doing is trying to go through the medicalization, legalization in the country. So I'm meeting with the members of the parliament, meeting with the regulator, Ministry of Healthcare, doing podcasts and public awareness, bringing, raising the awareness about these medicines. Because there's Armenia was a part of the Soviet Union. Oh. And there is a lot of stigma around psychedelics, and not just psychedelics, all the drugs. And the irony is that they don't really, most of the people, they don't really differentiate between psychedelics or other substances. So it's just drugs, and drugs are bad, that kind of stuff. So there is a lot of work that needs to be done in terms of the bringing awareness around those medicines, even around marijuana, which is again illegal in Armenia. So those are the things that I'm focusing on at this moment, trying to get approvals for the to conduct the clinical trials. And once those approvals are granted, we will conduct the clinical trial. And if and when the results are acceptable for the regulator, we will apply to register MDMA-assisted psychotherapy, similar way like MAPS is doing with the FDA in the United States.
Okay. Kind of a tough question, but like, do you feel like you're maybe like 2 years away from that happening, 3 years, 4 years?
Yeah, it's hard to say. But here's the thing, by 2024, it will be legally available in United States. So if we are not there yet in Armenia with the trials and everything, we will just, you know, table it and move forward with the other way, which is telling that this is already registered in US by FDA, and please register it in Armenia. We'll provide the dossier, the safety protocol, efficacy protocol, and then it will be up to the regulator to decide to approve it or not. But hopefully by then we will have less stigma and less ignorance around these medicines, and the regulator will be more open for registration. And another issue is that we really, you know, it's a small country, 3 million population, and having such a large patient population for mental health disorders, it's really a mental health epidemics. And fortunately, the government understands this.
Yep.
I had a few very good meetings with the leadership of the country, and they were very open for this type of healing modalities. However, the management in the Ministry of Healthcare, they are more conservative, and I understand why, because they've been, you know, educated in that anti-drug philosophy, and for them, what they see those fatal cases of people who struggle from the addiction and that type of stuff. They really didn't dive deep into the healing aspect of the psychedelics. So it will take time. But yes, everybody wants good, right? They want good for the people. It's their job. It's just little ignorance, but sure we will.
Well, exactly. Just like you said, it's ignorance, it's stigma, where we have the same thing in the United States, where we still have a lot of professionals who are like, well, you can't use a drug to cure a drug addiction. It's like, well, no, actually you can, and we're getting the research to prove it.
And that's the irony. These are the drugs which are less addictive and actually really helpful to fight the addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Ibogaine is amazing medicine to fight the really hard drug addictions, opioid addiction, heroin, cocaine addiction. It's really great.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No, I hope this question isn't too broad, but when we get into like therapy, like you said, your country is in high need of it. Is it more just you guys just don't have the amount of therapists, or you just don't have any like interest in therapy?
Well, the thing is that I'm sure you know that the traditional medicines do not really provide a relief. So while people will get medicated, and unfortunately, the SSRIs, as I said, the psychotropic medication, doesn't really work for everyone. At least one third wouldn't get any relief. Those are the treatment resistant the patient population, and those that are the people that the medicines are working on, they are not really functional in terms of being a full member of the society. You know, it kind of numbs feelings, but it also it closes the door of love. So the people who are, you know, heavily medicated on these medications, they're not really, most of them, they're not really able to enjoy the love of their children and the beauty of the sunrise and things that we are designed for. That's the one thing. And the other thing that also the talk therapy is and the traditional therapies, they really not that tuned for this deep trauma type of disorders. So psychedelics are really great for this type of patient population.
Well, and I think a lot of it's the disassociation, like the client experiences, where if you're treating someone without psychedelics and you're just doing traditional talk therapy, and if you're going to do any type of trauma work, you need to make sure they're in tune with their body. And people who have gone through so much horrendous trauma struggle with that at times because of those uncomfortable feelings where, again, they use the drugs to numb. That's what I love about psychedelics, from what I hear, is that it gives them the ability to do that when they're in that state of mind, when they're getting dosed, and it allows them to do it easier. Where in talk therapy, you teach them, yes, meditation, deep breathing exercises. But again, it takes a lot of effort to do that and time, and sometimes they're not willing to put in the time to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You need so much commitment to go like at least a couple of times a week. It's a monetary commitment. It's a time commitment. Yes. And when you don't see a relief, you kind of give up. And that's also another issue. But in the case of psychedelics, they really see from one to three sessions. Yes. And I'm not saying this is a magic bullet and it will work for everyone, but a lot of people see a great relief with these medicines, because like with the trauma, you know, people, it's not that people don't know that those terrible things happened to them in the past, you know, but it's just the pain is so strong even now that they're not able to process it. I mean, you say, well, it wasn't your fault. They're like, yeah, I know it wasn't my fault, but it's still there. The pain is there.
Yes.
But when you, for example, under the MDMA, they kind of have this perspective of looking at themselves, at this younger child from a side, saying, oh my God, this was so unfair to this child. This child needs to be carried and loved, and they become their own healer. In the MDMA assisted psychotherapy, all the biggest concept of the and the biggest principle is the focus on inner healing intelligence.
Okay.
So the therapist is not really doing a therapy in sense of the traditional talk therapy, but it's more of a creating this safe space, holding a space for the person to with the help of the medicine to wake up this inner healer intelligence that does the work, that does the healing. And it's very empowering for the person to tell them, hey, this is not the medicine, this is not the therapist, this is you.
Yes.
And we're just here. We are blessed to be here to hold the space to help you to do your own healing.
Yes. I've heard of people having certain out-of-body experiences where they're actually reliving their trauma, but again, they don't have those emotions that they would in the physical body, where, let's just say hypothetically, they may be floating, right? And they may be seeing the traumatic event. They're totally like away from it. They're not, again, experiencing those emotions, and they have a new sense of empathy, not just for yourself, but for the person doing the, let's say, the horrendous thing. They don't condone it, but they gain understanding about it.
Sometimes, yeah, sometimes. Well, the thing is, they don't need, when somebody does a harm to you, they don't really need to, they don't really need to say, oh, yeah, this man maybe had a reasons or whatever, but they change their attitude. It's not really hurting them. They say, hey, this wasn't right, you know, but I don't want to hold the pain any longer. Yes. And it wasn't my fault, and they kind of let it go. The psychedelic therapy works very well with the IFS, internal family systems therapy, which is an amazing modality that I'm now in process of getting trained with. And in the IFS, there is this self with the capital S, which is similar to your inner healing intelligence, or similar to the soul in the Eastern philosophies, which never can be damaged, no matter what kind of troubles it went through, what kind of traumas it went through the childhood. It never can be damaged. But then there are those parts who, because of those trauma, become so active, they blend with the self and they take control of the person. And that's not you. But with the IFS perspective, when you change the way you look at it, instead of, for example, saying, I feel anxious, you say, well, I have a part that feel anxious, and I have a part that feel joyful, and let's see, like, why this part feel anxious, and to go deeper and to heal it. And with the psychedelics, with this, you know, kind of euphoric type of state, you be able to better dive deep into these parts and heal these parts, and create more self energy, and hence do a deeper healing.
Yeah. See, I love the dialogue that we're actually creating right now, because again, by no means me or you, we're not saying talk therapy is bad or whatnot. There is definitely a place for it, you know, but it's just looking at different things in a different light.
Oh, absolutely. My mother is a psychoanalyst, so I wouldn't go against her. She'll kick my butt. But but no, I'm joking, obviously. But in general, talk therapy is a great modality. But for the traumas, for the drip trauma, for the psychiatric disorders such as PTSD or depression, those type of disorders, I think psychedelic medicines are a better tools than the talk trauma.
I agree. And again, I'm a counselor at a treatment center right now. It makes me think down the road, what would the world be like if we allowed this type of treatment in substance abuse treatment centers? How beneficial it'd be for them, again, the clients there? Because I'm just going to tell you, in the United States, like, the recovery rate is just very low in treatment centers. And I think it's just because of the reasons we're talking about right now.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. If we had a trauma-informed society, which understands the core of the addiction, which is, in most of the cases, is trauma. I mean, two people, you know, two friends are drinking, and one is a casual drinker, and the other is addicted to the substance. We're talking an alcohol, which is illegally available. But the largest largest addictive substance, basically. Unfortunately, and one becomes addictive, one becomes an alcoholic, and the other don't. And when you dive deep, you realize that this person has this deep trauma, childhood trauma or whatever, and because of that, now because if we step back, what is an addiction? It's a harm reduction in a way. People are self-medicating. They're trying to numb their pain by using an alcohol, meth, cocaine, whatever their drug of choice, heroin, opioids, whatever their drug of choice is.
But
unfortunately, societally, what we do when they start, you know, becoming addicted to the substances, those substances are not cheap. You know, they need to purchase it. And in most of the cases, they lose their job.
Yes.
And now they need to find money to buy those substances. They go through these illegal pathways to find those medicines. Sometimes they even steal from friends and family. And we punish them, say, hey, you know, that's not right. That's immoral. Yes. So we alienate these people from our circle. And now they are all by themselves, you know, going even more down towards that addiction path. And they take more to numb their pain. And eventually it ends up with the disaster, whether it's death or any kind of terrible things that happen to these people. But if we look, change the perspective and look from the, you know, give a love to these people, give a therapy to these people, give a social program like they do in Switzerland. Switzerland is such a great example for this.
Yes.
They have centers, they go, they can get the heroin dose, you know, from the nurse or practitioner. So there is no those the AIDS and this type of things that happen from a needle sharing, so it's clean. There are essentially no overdose cases because they are under the medical supervision. There are social programs which try to understand why this people is addicted to the substance, helping them to find some job, helping them to integrate with the family, giving love, giving connectedness. And if you look into the numbers, all the numbers are going down in Switzerland for the addiction, for the overdose, for the crime, because they don't now need to steal to buy the dose.
Right.
And government doesn't need to spend the tremendous amount of money that we in US spend for the DEA and other institutions. And I'm not saying we need to get rid of the DEA, but this institution can transform into becoming something that helps people to overcome the addiction, because it's not working. The war on drugs, unfortunately, for many years we see the results. It's not working. All the numbers are skyrocketing, with more than 100,000 opioid deaths, and this is crazy for United States. These things are not working. And we have something that really works in Switzerland. I mean, you can't incarcerate person for a year. Let's look into Portugal. All the numbers are down in Portugal as well.
Or maybe they don't want to. Maybe they.
but I think things are changing. People start to realize that it's not working. It's a fact.
Well, the reason I said that is because obviously there's a lot of conspiracy theories on the war on drugs, especially in the United States, where it wasn't necessarily about the drugs. It was putting more hippies and African Americans in jail. Like, that's what it was really about. Not necessarily, again, the drugs. That was more like of a cover up. I don't know if you ever heard before.
Oh yeah. I read the article of the advisor of the Nixon.
Yep.
Who was telling about his experience, how they, because, you know, this is United States, the freedom of speech is a constitutional right. The freedom of to getting together is also a constitutional right. But what could they do? The question was, how can we get these guys? They smoke marijuana, they do LSD. Okay, let's go after these drugs. This is a historical context. However, now we don't need to follow those logics. Mm-hmm. You know, it went there, and internationally there are those international laws which forbid their all those substances are scheduled. But it doesn't mean it has to stay like that. That's why we are having this renaissance of the psychedelics. These medicines are now in clinical trials, and things are changing. Things are changing, and people, and even the mental health practitioners understand that the toolkit they have is not enough to heal these people, their patient population. They want to. The traditional psychiatrists, they also need a better toolkit.
Yes.
To provide a relief to their patient.
Well, I think it's the ego, it's the negativity. I just think we all need to be open to all different types of therapeutic modalities. That, I think, is the biggest problem we have in this country, at least, is just people not willing to see other sides of things.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look into the ketamine therapy, there are more than 1,000, 1,500 clinics like all over the place. This is a good one step. Although a lot of them, they're just the ketamine clinics without the therapy. And unfortunately, it follows the pharma model that the people really need to go back in a couple of weeks to get dosed again. Otherwise, the symptoms come back. But with the therapy, we see a lot of great relief. So even if the ketamine is combined with the psychotherapy, it's a great medicine. It's legally available, so the practitioners can really, jump into these healing modalities right away, not to wait for the MDMA or a psilocybin to become legally available. And when it becomes available, they can add to their toolkit.
Yeah. No, another positive thing too is, like, when I've been interviewing a lot of ketamine doctors, you know, they all say the same thing, where it's like, it's not a one quick fix type of thing. It's like, when you do it, it's like, you still need to work on your nutrition, your sleep habits, your exercise therapy. Like, it's, you got to add all these other things in, or else it's not going to work.
It's not going to work, because you will just relapse again into your pain and, all those things that are troubling you. That's why if you do the proper preparation and do the drug session and then do the integration, that's when the deep healings happens.
So I want your opinion on something. In the United States, there's kind of been this debate on the psychedelic certifications, where if you're a therapist, should you or should you not have tried psychedelics yourself to do therapy? Or do you think it would be okay for someone who's never tried it to get certified and actually do services without actually experiencing it?
I think it's not a requirement legally, even with the MAPS within there. But however, I do believe that having a personal experience is very important.
Yes.
And I was watching an interview with Stan Grof. He was asked the same question. He said, absolutely. Yeah. The person has to know the territory, has to have this experience. And most importantly, need to have done their own healing work.
Yeah.
Because when you do the psychedelics yourself, you do your own deep dive into your psyche, mm-hmm. and you do your own healing. Because in order to be a great healer, you need to be healed yourself. Yeah. In order not to bring, with the IFS terminology, not to bring your protectors mm-hmm. into the therapy, not to bring your traumas, your right. issues into the therapy, to be a better healer for the person.
Yeah.
In the shamanic, in the shaman, sorry to interrupt, in the shamanic healing, those shamans, they go through their, well, that's not technically training, but they mm-hmm. become apprentice of the shaman for tens of years in mm-hmm. order to learn to do their deep work and learn. And the psychedelic psychotherapy is with the respect we kind of borrow from the indigenous people. Now we are using it in a medical context, but these people were using it for thousands of years. Yep. It's mm-hmm. the same therapy. They just call it a ceremony, but it's a therapy. So there is so much wisdom we can, with the respect and without any appropriation, to borrow and use from this medicine men and women who've been keeping mm-hmm. this wisdom and this knowledge for the years. But absolutely, doing your personal experiences is can be so much helpful for the person that you're providing the service to.
Mm-hmm. No, it's all great stuff. It really is. And I know sometimes, like in our society too, like me, for example, when I'm a counselor and I work with clients in recovery or in the treatment center, like I'm personally not in recovery. So they may have similar issues where it's like, well, you were never a severe substance user, so you don't know what it's like. But what I always try to tell people and other therapists in my shoes is like, if you just show unconditional love, caring, and empathy, yeah, they might be iffy towards you in the beginning, but it always overcomes it. It always overcomes it.
Oh, I agree. I agree. When you have, when, and again, I'm going right to the IFS, which mm-hmm. is with the self, doesn't have an agenda, but have this principle, guiding principles, which are like eight C's, which is compassion, connectedness, courage, calmness, clarity, all those things that you need to bring to the therapy table to be a better healer mm-hmm. for those people. In terms of the addiction, I don't believe that you have to go through the addiction yourself to be a better therapist, mm-hmm. as long as you bring those compassion and you bring love and understanding to the table. So I couldn't agree more with you.
And what I always tell them is that, you know, yeah, you've all used substances, but it's like, you have not all suffered the same way. You have not all been through the same experiences. It's all different.
Absolutely. And it's not about the substance. It's about the trauma and it's about the pain.
Yes.
So the therapist is there to understand where this mm-hmm. pain is coming from, to heal the pain. This is not about whether it's a cocaine or heroin or alcohol, whatever the drug of choice is, it doesn't matter. What matters is that these people are trying to numb their pain, to escape their reality, which is also another thing that not many people talk, which is the difference between responsible use and the addiction.
Yes.
In particular, in Armenia, if somebody is a user, they will say, oh, he's an addict, but it's a cliche. That's not true. In my understanding, somebody is abusing it when, for example, he's using whatever he's using, whether it's a food or you know, food is the largest substance of abuse, right? People, that's the first thing people go, like when they feel the pain, they just eat and overeat.
You know, I got a story I want to tell you about, that where I was working at Adolescent Treatment Center and I was working at the girls' house, And this one 14, 15-year-old girl had like a food addiction. I mean, she wasn't obese or anything, but she just loved food, 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 food.
Yeah.
And she told me, food never caused me trauma. Food never called me a bitch. Food never beat me, whatever. Like, I like food because it gives me love and caring.
Yeah.
And that stuck with me that when she said that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We don't look at it. Even like meditation can become an escape place, mm-hmm. you know, like, and nobody will tell you, oh, he's overly meditating, you know, uh-huh. dissociating, and your protectors are happy. Everyone is happy, you know, meditation is such, and I meditate myself, and yeah. meditation is great. But anything can become, an abuse in a way of addiction.
But how does your society look at it too plays a role? Like maybe shopping. Let's say if there's a rich person shopping a lot, are we going to look at them as having a problem?
Yeah.
Normally, no.
Absolutely. Normally, no. However, it is a way for them to escape.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. However, it's important to differentiate because there are, I'm sure you know with the, Carl Hart and his book of a drug use.
I was going to bring that up. Did you see him in Joe Rogan? He has a really good episode with Joe Rogan.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. He's great. He's been there a couple of times. He's been on Joe Rogan a couple of times. Yeah, he's great. But I think the perspective of us as a society being able to differentiate between use and abuse is so important. Understanding whether is it an escape or you just, you know, doing this every now and then to relax, to be more compassionate person for your family, for your community. Do you pay your taxes? Do you go in the morning, do your job? Do you do it well? If you do all those things, then I don't think it's an abuse. I think it's a responsible use.
Yes.
And no one shall be incarcerated for a responsible use. I don't believe it's fair. No one should be responsible for use whatsoever. I mean, what they put in their body. It's my personal opinion.
Right. Yep.
But you don't put into jail for somebody using something. It's the opposite. You have to understand why this person is, you know, doing this to help them, to give them love, to cure them. Not to put in jail. That's ridiculous. You have 3%. United States is a 3% of the world population. 25% of the incarcerated people. That's crazy. That's ridiculous.
Whenever I talk to people from like Europe or Africa, they say the exact same thing. They're like, "Wow, you guys love your jails for some reason," or it makes no sense. Why are you putting someone in jail when they're putting stuff in their body? And my only rebuttal is, well, I don't know. They could be under influence and they could do something erratic to hurt someone else. But like, that's the only thing I got that I can even think of, maybe.
Well, we have laws of if you hurt someone, then there are laws that forbid that and you go to jail for that.
Yeah.
But you're like a lot of, but most of the people are incarcerated for a minor drug offenses, which is basically use, and a lot of them from marijuana, which is legal in many states. People in other states are sitting in jail. How unfair is that?
I know.
How crazy is that? And if you talk about the crime, I never heard a single person who was high on marijuana and did something illegal, because it's the opposite with alcohol. Yes, you know, you drive drunk and you go into the accident. On marijuana, you want to drive like really slow.
Yeah,
it's different type of medicine. You don't want to, like, I never heard like, oh, these two friends, you know, they smoked marijuana and they fell and robbed the store. No, never.
Right.
It never happened. They just want to, you know, stay at their places and enjoy their high.
Or if they're like super high on the couch, they may look like they're dead, but they're not dead. They're just out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, wow. Oh.
Hey, what's the deal? What's the deal in Minnesota? I think medical was legal when I was there. and recreational not. Is that
just medical
still the case? Yeah,
it's still the case. I think we were working towards it, but it could still be ways. But definitely, we're okay medical.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the thing. Some of my clients in the treatment center, they're trying to get like medical marijuana, and some treatment centers will allow it, some won't. So yeah, we've been kind of dealing with that too, the whole thing. And yeah. So
well, hopefully one day.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. One can only dream. So, Sergey, thank you so much for being on the show, man. I had a lot of fun with you. I had a lot of fun talking about this stuff.
Likewise.
Oh, it was great. Hey, if any of my listeners do want to get a hold of you, is there like a website, or should they just go to your Facebook page, or how does that work to contact you?
Yeah, my page, the foundation that I created, which is now in process of pushing the legalization in Armenia, is antiobliss.com, and we can put it in the notes for the people. They can also join the psychedelic assisted therapy Facebook page, and they can reach out to me through there, or I'm on LinkedIn. Those channels are available.
You have to let me know your LinkedIn. I tried to find you on there and I couldn't, but I'll send you.
Yeah.
All right, my friend. Well, I had a blast. Thank you.
Hey, likewise. Thank you, sir.
I want to thank Sergey for another awesome and amazing behavioral health integration episode. I just want to thank all of my listeners for your support, and just to inform everyone that the information expressed in this episode was not meant to be taken as therapeutic advice. If you do find yourself struggling with any type of mental health or addiction issues, please seek the care of a medical doctor or a licensed mental health therapist. And if anyone has any further questions for me, you can reach me at my email address, behaviorhealthintegration121@gmail.com. You can also find me on LinkedIn at Jacob Minig, where you will find more educational posts on psychotherapy, trauma, and addiction. And finally, you can follow me on my website, which is behaviorhealthintegration.org. I also want to inform everyone that there is a great new device out there called Comigo. It's a breathing device meant to control and manage your breathing rates and the depth of your breathing as you inhale and exhale, to again help relieve any type of anxiety and stress-like symptoms. And if you do put the BHI podcast into the promo code, you get $30 off this amazing device. It is a once-in-a-lifetime deal, and you will not be disappointed. All right, everyone, until next time, have a good day. Bye.